The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning to you. 5 minutes past nine on this Wednesday, the 8th of November, 2023. You're very welcome along to another edition of the 9 till noon show. Our lines are open for you right now. If you want to get involved in the conversation, we've got loads lined up. We always have space for what you want to talk about too. Well, we hope what we've lined up is what you want to talk about, but I think you know what I'm trying to say here. 086 60 25,000 WhatsApps and texts to that number. And just a reminder for you, if you want to send your WhatsApp voice notes, use that number to 086 60 25,000. For those of you wanting to call us, Caroline and Shannon taking your calls this morning, 07491 25000. And the email address is open to you to contact us as well, comments@highlandradio.com. And just to invite you, if you want to and if it suits you, you can watch the program on our YouTube channel, Highland Radio Ireland. You can access that via the YouTube app on your smart TV or your Fire Stick or across your mobile devices. And we're also on our Facebook pages, Highland Hub, Highland Radio News and Sport, and we also pop up on X. Okay, the papers this morning, we'll start with the Finn Valley Voice. There's anger and annoyance throughout the Finn Valley this week at the news that a memorial to the first Royal Ulster Constabulary officer killed in the Republic of Ireland during the Troubles has been removed approximately a week after it was first unveiled. On October 28th, 1973, at 8:40 p.m., Detective Constable John Doherty, aged 31, was off duty visiting his mother's house in Ballandrate when he was ambushed by IRA gunmen and fatally injured his girlfriend, who was with him in the car, survived the attack. We spoke to John's brother yesterday, who expressed that annoyance and disappointment at the removal of that plaque on the programme yesterday. Both in a show newspapers this morning, as you can imagine, focus on the tragic events of the weekend. The Inishowen Independent, sadness as two teens die in fatal crash. Community in shock as Inishowen loses more young lives on its roads. And there's extensive coverage, of course, inside the paper today. The Inish Times, there has been an outpouring of grief across Inishowen at the deaths of two teenaged friends in a road collision near Glenealy in the early hours of Monday. Alana Harkin and Thomas Gallagher, both from Glenealy, lost their lives in a single vehicle collision at Terriwee at around 12:30 a.m. A male in his teens who was also in the car received treatment for injuries that are believed to be non-life-threatening. And we heard yesterday that hopefully he's making positive inroads in his recovery. On to the Donegal Post this morning. Gardaí believe that a fire which caused extensive damage to a vacant premises in Donegal town may have been started maliciously. Fire crews battled to bring a blaze under control at the former Picture Mouldings factory on Halloween night. A Garda spokesperson said at 8:45 a.m. on that date, Gardaí were alerted to the fact that a derelict factory was on fire at that location. That story is one of the appeals featured within the Community Garda information item, which you can listen back to, of course, on our podcast or on the Highland Radio News and Sport Facebook page or on Garda Síochána Facebook page there. On to the Nationals now. The Irish Times, beef exports from Ireland to the Chinese market have been suspended after a case of atypical BSE was detected in a cow during recent routine Department of Agricultural tests. The timing, terrible, really, because these atypical cases are quite infrequent, one every 3 years. There was one back in 2019, which suspended our trade with China, and it just about got up and running again. It's worth around $40 million a year and could be built upon. And it just so happened that another case was discovered whilst Micheál Martin was actually in China, and it's going to be months before trade resumes once again. The suspension of exports from Irish producers to China has been described as a blow to the agriculture industry, as China had been seen as a market for big potential growth. Previously, beef exports to China were halted for 2.5 years following a similar case of atypical BSE picked up in May 2020. We have export deals with around about 70 countries. China is the only one that we have this agreement with them, whereby if a case of BSE is discovered atypical, these just random cases that pop up, that it suspends exports. So hopefully that gets back up and running really soon. But overall, in the wider scale of things, it's not a greatly significant part of the beef export market. But the sooner it's back up and running, of course, the better. The cow, they're very stringent because the cow, 10 years old, it was a fallen animal and wasn't actually, obviously, going to be exported to China. But that was the agreement that was reached with them. And therefore, exports are now suspended. The Irish Independent this morning, a Sinn Féin TD is suing a newspaper and a journalist over coverage of his response to the Hamas attack on Israel on October 7th. The party's Dublin-based South TD, Chris Andrews, has initiated legal action over reporting of a comment he made the day after the attack. And of course, he's perfectly entitled to do so. And the courts will decide if it goes that far. But it is interesting to see politicians suing the press for coverage. Mr. Andrew is the latest in a string of Sinn Féin figures to take legal action against media organisations. Sinn Féin leader Mary Lou McDonald was nominated for a Bully of the Year award by a group that campaigns against powerful individuals using defamation laws to silence critics known as SLAPs, S-L-A-P-P-S's, strategic lawsuits against public participation. Ms. McDonald's defamation case against RTE, which was related to provisional IRA rape victim Maria Cahill, has been flagged with the Council of Europe as a potential threat to media freedom by the Index on Censorship. On to the Irish Daily Mail. Static cameras to tackle speed on our roads. Garda Commissioner Drew Harris wants to introduce static speed cameras across the country's road network to address the soaring number of road deaths. Communities have been devastated by 165 road fatalities so far this year, a figure Taoiseach Leo Varadkar described as a matter of enormous concern. Although speed, of course, is not a factor in all of these collisions. The Garda Commissioner called yesterday for enhanced speed trap infrastructure, including the introduction of static cameras and the wider use of average speed cameras. So how would that work? Well, let's say, for an example, you would have one camera located at the bottom of McGrory's Brae on the Ballybuffet to Donegal Town Road, and then you'd have another at Clare Chapel. It would take a picture of your number plate at the bottom of McGrory's Brae, and then another at Clare Chapel, as an example. And it would have calculated what the minimum that that journey could take at the legal speed limit. And if you were on the wrong side of that, then instantly it would know you were speeding. You had to have been speeding. It wouldn't account for speeding excessively in the wrong part of the road. It depends how far the cameras are apart. I don't know. Just with our road network, I think there's only one speed trap camera, and that's the Port Tunnel. But I don't know if it's practical. I can understand why people are looking for solutions or things that might help, but you just wonder if it's really going to be practical or if it's just noise. Do you know what I mean? When we really should be saying, well, what really, really, really can we do? Just continuing the conversation from Norma Foley. She's obsessed with mobile phone usage amongst young people. We heard from the INMO yesterday that I can't remember the exact word that was used, but it wasn't very complimentary to say that really they're not worried about phones in schools. This is the Irish, INTO, sorry. They're not worried about phones in schools. They're worried about the fact that there's no teachers in schools. There's 800 vacancies. It's going to be 2,000 shortly, you know, and this is, again, it sounded like he thought this was something of a distraction. But anyway, what do you think about the government getting involved in Santa? Because Santa, this is a direct appeal to him, I presume, Santa shouldn't bring smartphones to young children this Christmas, Education Minister Norma Foley has urged. Oh, I'm not sure if this is the first time a government minister has spoken directly to Santa, but be that as it may. It comes as the government launched a plan to encourage Irish parents not to buy a mobile phone for their children while in primary school. The Department of Education has drawn up new guidelines to help schools set up voluntary agreements between all parents to commit to not buying a smartphone for young kids. And she's obviously had to extend that out to Santi, because we don't know what he might do and what's on the list. But anyway, what do you think about that? 08660 25,000. The Mirror this morning, or it's the Star, in fact. Murder accused Joseph Puska told the court contemptible lies, I beg your pardon, the prosecution has told the jury, adding that Ashley Murphy was an investigator in her own murder as she got the DNA of the person who killed her under her fingernails. So it's just a strange sentence structure. My apologies. Prosecuting barrister Anne-Marie Lawler, senior counsel, made the comments in her closing speech to the jury in the trial of Mr. Puska, who's 33, of Offaly, who denies the murder of 23-year-old schoolteacher Ms. Murphy on January 12th, 2020. And I think part of his defence was that he came to her aid. But anyway, that's going to come to a resolution really quite soon. Finally, in the Irish Daily Mirror this morning, almost a quarter of Derry Girls viewers looked into visiting Ireland within a month of watching the show. Data found that 23% headed to official holiday and travel guide at Ireland.com. Tourism Ireland, a cross-border body that promotes both the North and the Republic, sponsored the final series of the hit Channel 4 show. A draft tourism strategy for the North, published by its Department for the Economy, states screen tourism is growing at a phenomenal rate due to the popularity of Derry Girls and Game of Thrones. It states, with an average of 2.9 million viewers per episode, TV series Derry Girls has been an international success, connecting to audiences through its humour and storytelling. Does that surprise you? I am going to watch Derry Girls. I haven't got round to it yet. Can you see how it has a tourism benefit for the area? 086 60 25,000. Right, let us take a break. We'll be back with our first guests on the programme very, very shortly. Stay right where you are. Now, many of you want to keep talking about the traffic in Letterkenny, but interestingly, a lot of the messages start off with an apology as to, you know, wanting to talk about it. But look, it's important to you, so don't worry about it. Take the lights off the actual roundabout. No need for them. Put left turn only on the road where it applies, says a listener. A few lights on the roundabout are confusing. One is on the island coming from the Derry side. The other is when you exit into the Derry Road. This is confusing, mostly older people, but the lights are managing the traffic, but the volume is too much. Another of these lights are classic reasons why people should not be given a lifetime driving license and should be made resit their test once every 10 years. Road design upgrades, and they haven't a clue on how to use them. These lights on junctions are very common in other big towns and cities. Well, there's something interesting in that, because if you do your test in Donegal Town, for an example, you won't even encounter a traffic light or a complicated roundabout. And then you're given your license and you can go and drive pretty much anywhere you like with no real test as to how you manage with certain junctions and light setups and what have you. I'm just using Donegal Town as an example because I know it as a fact. Greg, I hate to keep on about it, but the traffic this morning into Letterkenny, it's a bloody nightmare. Is that a swear word? I don't know. I've said it now. Another says, I can't understand. They spend billions. If you broke down, nobody can come get you. Four lanes of traffic. It's a poo show. Ambulances can't get through. That's a disgrace. Who set that up? Nobody knows to go left or right. It's not right. Innocent people getting scraped or hit. Even buses don't know where to go. I was on a bus the last day. The light was red. He went through it. Nobody knows what to do. The RSA need to set up the rules of the road. There has to be rules. It's silly how they've done it. I noticed actually someone mentioned debris on the cycle lanes or the walkways yesterday. I noticed that's being cleaned up this morning, which is a delightful coincidence. So hopefully if you're on that route, you'll see the benefits of that. Colour-coded lanes is a waste of time because the middle lane doesn't go back far enough and it's not wide enough to go back further. Whoever designed that setup didn't see many roundabouts. Well, I'm sorry about my colour-coded suggestion. I was panicking. Last one before we go to our first guest. Yep, those Polestar traffic lights are certainly working wonders, read the issue of road safety, by seriously curbing the speed of motorists. Last evening, it took me 25 minutes to travel from Arena 7 to the Polestar roundabout, a distance of around about 1 kilometre. This works out at 40 minutes to cover a mile or a speed of 1.5 miles per hour. Had a good bit of time on my hands to work that out, Greg. Now, if authorities could enforce that speed limit countrywide, what joy it would bring to safety. Road safety in Donegal. That comes in from Jim N. Thanks, Jim. Keep them coming into us on all a range of topics, of course. 086 60 25,000. Any of you subscribe to Facebook? I got a notification yesterday from Instagram, stroke Facebook, under the guise of Meta, offering me an ad-free experience for $12.99 a month, €13 per month. And then it says your info won't be used for ads, and they're claiming this is about EU laws and privacy and blah, 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 blah. But are any of you going to pay the €13 a month? I would imagine it's going to become really difficult to use Facebook as they try and coerce us into paying €13 a month. But anyway, what did you think about it? I'm just going to crack on as a free user and just do what I did with Twitter. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. I don't need it as such. But what about you out there? What do you think? €13 a month for Facebook ads free. Did any of you sign up? Did Michael Leddy sign up for ad-free Facebook, Michael?
No, Greg, I did not.
Would you be tempted?
I don't intend to either.
No, you don't intend to.
No, I don't. I mean, like you said there, it's not something we need. I've been pulling away from Twitter, which I really loved and have always, you know, I've always preferred it. But over the last year or so, it's become less interesting to me and to many of my friends as well. So I'm just using it a lot less. In fact, I did a search last night on Facebook, but it was on Twitter, if you know what I mean. I wanted to see if anyone else was experiencing some issues. And the research results were absolute rubbish. I mean, they really were. It was just, honestly, it was just random ladies, maybe with one or two likes. It was supposed to be the top results on the Facebook hashtag. It was just nonsense, and it reminded me, it's just kind of a useless sort of website.
I don't know what Twitter is like to use, or X is like to use if you pay for it, but it's, you know, your comments are suppressed if you don't pay. And also your experience is altered, and he's going to do more and more of that. You know, rather than incentivizing by offering features, I think really what they do is try and make the free version difficult to use. But I mean, $13.99 a month, like if you've got Netflix or you've got, and we talk about this on a Friday, of course, you've got all the various other monthly subscriptions. $13.99 or is it $12.99 to use Facebook without ads? I don't know. I don't see it. Every fourth post is an ad. Really is what you're looking at there. All right, Michael, you're having problems actually posting to Facebook. What's going on?
Facebook, and it's the artificial intelligence. It's the fact that Facebook, you don't actually deal with people anymore so much at Facebook. And I'm just looking at their own literature on the matter here, and it just says, and I'm quoting, artificial intelligence, AI technology, is central to our content review process. AI could detect and remove content that goes against our community standards before anyone reports it. So this last few weeks, Facebook has taken a dislike to my TV reviews, which up to now, you're the only person I know who's taken a dislike to my TV reviews. Yeah. Now Facebook has decided...
Is it not doing? Is Facebook now not really effectively though doing God's work?
What Facebook is doing, and here's the most recent example this week, which I know caught Caroline's eye. I had posted a review on my blog and then double pasted it to Facebook, and it was an obscure, I think, reasonably obscure 1960s science fiction series called The Time Tunnel. And I had reviewed an episode, a couple of harmless paragraphs, and an image. I think it's based around the images. So the post went up on Saturday night. And then on a Sunday evening, it's gone, and I get this warning, which is the fifth, I think, I've received in the last month. Your post goes against our community standards on nudity and sexual activity. And it goes on to say that I can't appeal this decision, but it explains that for various reasons, community standards have been violated. Now, it's all very humorous, and it's usually easy enough to fix. But for the time that it's taken down, there's like a black mark against your account. So obviously I use my account for a lot of other reasons, and some of them are reasonably, you know, reasonably important.
Sensible and stuff, yeah.
Yeah. So until this is... Now, so far I've been very lucky because I can resolve each of these...
Yeah, but it's accusing you of something that really is, you know, completely out of character as well, to suggest that you're to a particular platform that you're posting... inappropriate material. Like, I know it's not the biggest deal in the world, but it is. It is an accusation against you that's completely untrue.
Absolutely. And I was curious, and I put it up on my own Facebook, then my normal page, just to see was anyone else experiencing this, because you're going to have a situation. I've been lucky so far because I have been able to get the post back up, because after you report it, I think it goes to a human being, but again, I can't be sure of that because you never hear from people anymore. But it does go back up.
I mean, is there a hierarchy of AI where, like, you've got the initial AI and then the AI's boss? You know, I mean, I don't, what's going on?
Something like that. Yeah. You're going from R2-D2 to a C-3PO to use a star Wars reference. Yeah. But the thing is, I'm wondering if anyone else has experienced this. And eventually it's going to be a problem. I experienced this on all of the social networks at some point or another, social media sites. Like, there was... Tumblr took down a comic book post of mine some years ago, but would not put it back up. It was just a Marvel comic from the 1980s.
Maybe that was copyright, no?
No, because it's a good question. No, you have a very valid point. But no, I mean, a thousands up there, and so have other people. It was specifically, again, on sexual grounds. That is a big trigger for them.
Yeah.
And they're obviously objecting to the image. But the image in this case, and the images of other shows in the last few weeks, Time Tunnel has happened twice. And it's simply just the logo of the show, which is a sort of a blue background with white text on it. It's just very harmless, but for some reason the AI doesn't like it. And aside from Facebook, this to me raises questions about AI. It's a big buzzword at the moment. We're all talking about all the things that AI can potentially do for us in society. But of course, AI, as you well know, makes a lot of mistakes. Elon Musk's self-driving cars have obviously been involved in an accident or two and stuff like that. So it's interesting to see that when it's used for something as basic as recognizing imagery and text, it can fall short. And I was curious as to how many other people have found their posts or their images have been flagged by Facebook, even though there's nothing even remotely objectionable in them.
Yeah, all right, okay. Well, we'll put it out there and see what our listeners say. It is a distraction. But also, again, you know, you don't want to dig too deep in it, but they are accusing you of doing something that clearly you're not doing as well. And also, I presume a certain amount of strikes against you, it's going to be a problem. But back to the payment stuff, you see, another thing that's going to start happening now is Facebook are going to start suppressing the reach of your posts. Which is the next thing. Do you know what I mean? So what they'll do is they boost the posts of people that pay. Which I think is a bit of and it's the only show in town really for a lot of people. You know, it's quite interesting. It's a funny turn of events. But anyway, hopefully you get all your situations sorted. We'll see if anyone. I've never been flagged for anything. I've never been. You know how people get their pages cloned? Been cloned.
I'll get the first chance I get.
It'll not be hard for me to figure out who did it if it happens now. But no, I've been really quite lucky in that regard. But anyway, listen, Michael, we'll chat to you Friday. Thanks for your time today. Take care of yourself. Bye-bye. Anyone else affected by that? 086 60 25000. WhatsApps and texts to that number. We were speaking to Sinead at the end of the show yesterday. Her and her partner are effectively homeless, other than the fact that they have a caravan that's located close to the Polestar roundabout, but they can't get the council for whatever reason. We've contacted the council to see if they have anything to say about this, to get access to water or sewage, to get rid of waste and what have you. So they're living in this caravan, no proper heat, no water, and they have to go out to other businesses really effectively to just wash themselves and what have you. And it's going to get minus sub-zero from Friday onwards for at least a short spell. This emailer says, Rhys Sinead, who's been on the housing list for 6 years, how come we manage to house all the refugees that have come in the past couple of years? These people deserve to be housed, but for the government to state that we have it all sorted is wrong. There are still Irish people who are suffering. 12,000 are homeless. Yeah, so the debate is raging. It's across most of the media, both print and audio and TV, about these new government guidelines that have been approved by Cabinet to encourage parents to not purchase smartphones for primary school children. Deputy Joe McHugh is a former Minister for Education. He's with us now. Joe, good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg.
So what? Give us an understanding as a legislator what this phrasing is. So the Cabinet have agreed to encourage parents. So what does that really mean in layman's terms?
Look, sometimes and most times communities use their own initiative. And in fairness to a group of schools, I think it was six schools initially in Wicklow, they used their initiative and they said they were going to ban mobile phones outright. Now, I know that garnered a lot of media publicity. But when you speak to a lot of the principals in our own county in Donegal, a lot of principals and boards of management already have a policy in place that they don't allow mobile phones into primary schools. So to answer your question, what does the legislation do? Look, I don't think, you know, even the memo to Cabinet will change much, but what it will do, it'll raise that awareness and that need to debate this issue. This issue is not just for primary school, it's also for secondary school. And I think it's also a debate that's needed for many people, including ourselves, our own generation, Greg, in terms of phone usage. And, you know, when we put the phone down at night, is it 8 o'clock in the evening? Is it 9 o'clock? Or let's call a spade, is it midnight or 1 a.m? And it's a habit form. I know the London School of Economics did a survey a number of years ago. It maintains that it takes 66 days to form a habit. Most of us are in this habit. And I suppose the key thing for us is to introduce good habits, good phone habits. And most of the adult population don't have good phone habits. But that, I think that's the thinking behind
it. I think, too, also, I think that there's a lot of parents, guardians, caregivers that want to say no. A lot of schools that want to say no. But it's difficult because if the majority of the current generation, and I suppose this is almost about the 4, 5, and 6-year-olds now rather than the 9, 10, 11-year-olds now. And I could be misreading this, but it empowers parents. Change the culture a little bit, you know, softly, softly. Do you know that sort of way? So that maybe for the 5, 6, 7-year-olds now who are becoming 9, 10, 11-year-olds, that it's easier to say no, that everyone having a phone at school at that age is no longer the norm. So I kind of see the merit in that. And I think that's why I don't really think there's much of a debate here as such, because I don't see it as a war on phones or an imminent thing. I just see this as something that's trying to maybe change culturally things in a few years.
Yeah, I think you're right. And look, let's be honest. Schools have their own rules. And look, secondary schools, and I'm just thinking in one particular secondary school, close to my own heart, where my own two kids are going, like, they're not allowed the phones in classroom. Like, they put it into their locker in the morning and they get it at break time if they need be, if there's any messages. So I think it's creating that awareness. Yes, it's culture. But look, the big debate is what kids are doing outside of class, outside of school, and what time do young teenagers have phones at night time? So I'm not a big believer in just saying no for the sake of no. We need to explain it better. We need to explain why phones at the side of your bed, receiving text messages and sending WhatsApp messages at midnight and 1 a.m. You're not going to get a good
Sorry,
night's sleep.
Joe, I couldn't sleep. I just wanted to say hello. I mean, what's wrong with that? I'm only joking, of course.
You never text after midnight, in fairness. Great.
What do you think of the INTO's comments that this really, you know, I mean, they're not worried about schools and phones, phones and schools. Now, when they say they're not worried, I can understand the context in which the comment was made. But what they're saying is look, we've got an 800 shortfall in primary school teachers. It's heading towards 2,000. There's not enough career progression for those that have emigrated to come back because they're almost starting at zero. We did hear Leo Varadkar referencing some about the building of houses and looking at pay. But really, that is the real crisis in teaching at the moment. And we've got SETs being taken away from their important work to plug the gaps. I mean, I get why the phone story is kind of sexy, if you know what I mean, for the media and what have you, and for politicians. But I do take John's point that really the big issue is here is, you know, and maybe it's not as big an issue in Donegal, Joe, but it is an issue that we need teachers here, you know, because maybe looking at the phones is all the students have to do because there's no teachers to teach them.
Well, look, there's a crisis in teaching, and I know getting sub-teachers is a big issue. I know John Boyle has been very, very active on that over the years, and they've come up with new models and new ways of doing it. And some of these new strategies are working, but look, it's a demand-supply issue, and it's not a question of teachers going abroad. There's always going to be a percentage in the cohort teachers that are going to go abroad for a couple of years, but we do have a massive issue. Demographics are increasing. The demographics for the primary school system, the pressure was on them 10, 15 years ago. Now it's in the secondary school system. And at the same time, with immigration, the numbers are going up in primary school again. So look, it is the issue of the day. This phone issue, no, it's not the top priority issue by any means. Your show has been dedicated this last month to 6 weeks on health issues. We know the issues, but at the same time, one of the bad habits we all have is our overuse of the mobile phone, and I'm included in that as well.
Yeah, and I think it is actually a wider conversation. I think that's a point well made. Listen, Joe, thank you very much for your time today. I do appreciate it. That's Deputy Joe McHugh there, former Minister for Education, just getting his views on that hot topic. Again, it's like I'm sitting here and I'm talking about it on this programme. It's not one that exercises me particularly. But it's that doesn't mean we shouldn't be talking about it. I want to say good morning to Audrey, Dolores, Rosemary, Michael, Annie, and Kathy. Apparently, it's raining in London this morning. Kathy, I hope you stay in the dry. Thank you very much for all of you messaging us on social media, watching us on our YouTube and Facebook pages. My friend failed his driving test when he was taken to the Polestar roundabout 2 weeks ago. He'd never been taken there with the traffic lights when on his lessons. He was told he'd done brilliant at all other areas during the test, but went into the wrong lane on the roundabout, which is an instant fail. He now must pay for more lessons and wait for another test date. Very unfair. It is. Hopefully now he won't have to wait as long for a repeat test. I think you do get fast-tracked a little bit, so it's probably not going to be 6 or 7 months. But that's really unfortunate. My heart goes out to them because they're probably, you know, very keen to get on the road. Was in Letterkenny yesterday evening. The lights weren't bad, but people also have to waken up and move when the light turns green. Can't just blame the lights. They do probably still need tweaking a bit further. Read the speed cameras. In Scotland, on the approach roads to villages and towns, there are speed limit signs, followed by a flashing sign showing your vehicle speed. Then finally, cameras on an overhead gantry. And do you know what? It works. If you get caught speeding, you only have yourself to blame. There you go. Fair warning, fair signage. Boom. You can't complain at that, can you? It's not shooting fish in a barrel because there's due warning, isn't it? Static speed cameras at Lurgy Brack and Clare. You could do 400 miles per hour because you still wait for 30 minutes at Kilross, Maclay's Corner and Ballybuffet Main Street. I McGrory's Bray, I think I meant to say. If I didn't say McGrory's Bray, I meant that stretch of road there. But of course, it wouldn't work with what you're talking about in between. Greg, the talk is all about road deaths, and rightly so, but no talk of the 550 people who died from mistakes in our hospitals last year. We talk about that extensively, and they're two very serious issues. Fixing one won't fix the other, and we talk about all of those issues at different times. I take your point. The Garda Commissioner would be better employed out on the roadways protecting the citizens of Ireland rather than sitting in on these committees being interrogated by politicians. Sad for the loved ones who've gone on before. Good morning. Jude Morrow, CEO and founder of Neurodiversity Training. Thank you so much for joining us. And a big congratulations, Jude, on winning the Best New Start at InterTrade Ireland's Seedcorn NI Awards. Good morning to you.
Morning. Good morning, Greg. It's lovely to be here and catching up with you again.
Yeah, fantastic. Can you can we begin by talking about neurodiversity, what it is and how it affects people?
As I say everywhere I go, and at the risk of sounding like Morpheus from The Matrix, neurodiversity is everywhere. It is all around us. Neurodiversity is an important component of the human existence. It's as important as biodiversity, geodiversity, gender diversity, and it's the idea that some of us out there, like me, have different minds, and that's okay. Instead of some minds, like my autistic mind, being viewed as a disordered mind or a broken mind, that it's a perfectly acceptable mind and a diverse mind.
That's so what that we're clear, neurodiversity then, it's an umbrella term.
It is. Neurodiversity captures everybody. So neurotypical would be the majority of the population, and neurodivergent would be like me, autistic, ADHD, dyslexic, dyspraxic, etc., etc.
Okay, and talk to me about the neurodiversity training.
Well, with neurodiversity training, what happened was I was a social worker for a long time, and I wrote a book about my experiences of growing up as an autistic child in the mainstream school system. It was just a bit of a hobby project, but then all of a sudden people were asking me to come in and do training in their schools and their community groups and their organisations, and it's grown and scaled all over the world. We've done training for every continent now, including the South Pole. So it's kind of grown up and up and up over the last 3 years since we've come into existence, because with DEI, diversity, equity and inclusion, neurodiversity is seen as a really, really key component. And we are proudly at the spearhead of making neurodiversity aware places and a normality in society.
It's coming across. Are you trying to change phraseology? Do you see that as really important?
We're not just trying to change phraseology and symbols. We're trying to change mindsets and attitudes. And this is the example that I can always give. What I find really, really hard in life is tying my shoelaces and tying knots. Right. But what I can do well is I can tie a parachute to myself and go skydiving in my free time. But here's the issue, though, Greg, is that people will focus on the Jude Morrow who can't tie his shoes rather than the Jude Morrow that can put a parachute on and jump out of a plane or a helicopter or whatever. You know, that's what we want to change. We want people to take a strengths-based approach and focus on what people are good at rather than what we may be I suppose, challenged by in comparison to our peers, whether that's our school peers, our colleagues, our friends, neighbours, loved ones, spouses, etc.
Yeah, and I just wonder if sort of that attitude that we have as humans often goes far beyond neurodiversity, that we often, you know, see the negative in people before we see the positives.
And that's absolutely true, and that's rooted in Freudian psychology. I mean, whenever we were early humans, we had to keep ourselves safe. We do have an inherent survival instinct. So what we do is we point out things which maybe aren't the norm in order to protect ourselves. Because if you were to ask me in one question, what's the biggest challenge that autistic people face? It's not that we lack social skills. It's not that we have communication difficulties. It's the fact that so many people have unconscious negative bias toward us. And that's what we're doing, is we're challenging that completely to, I suppose, shape hearts and minds and practicalities from looking at what people perceive to be deficiencies, but rather honing in on our greatest strengths and gifts, because that's how people thrive.
Right. So talk to us about the training, who it's provided to, you know, its format and outcomes.
Well, at the start, we were doing training sessions for schools and workplaces, you know, for the general staff, for the management, HR leadership in schools. I was doing for teachers and classroom assistants and then parents in the afternoon. But what we thought earlier this year, is it really working? You know, the one and done training day, you know, coming in for a day, telling some skydiving jokes, you know, and whatever else, is it really working? And we kind of decided earlier this year that it wasn't. So what we did this year is we went in a radical new direction, and that we wanted to launch an app that anybody at any stage of their journey, whether it's parents of autistic kids or newly diagnosed adults, could jump in, get live weekly learning classes, Q&A sessions, and a full social feed for less than the price of a single and counselling session every year. Because the truth is, Craig, families and autistic adults and kids out there feel abandoned. Do you know what I did in preparation for this interview? I wanted to count how many times I had been invited to a public demonstration or to address a rally in the last 5 years, because autistic people and their parents and families feel abandoned. Do you know what the number was? 26. 26 event organisers and rally organisers and protesters had asked me to come and address their rallies. And the reason why is because all these people want to come together because they feel abandoned. Mm-hmm. So what we wanted to do, even for parents and families and anybody that wants to learn about the topic, is that we have a one-stop shop app now. And that's what concept and what idea got us the Seed Corn Award a couple of weeks ago. And the grand final for All Ireland is actually tomorrow night.
And we wish you every success in that. Jude, what's the impact sort of this conversation, your enthusiasm, your approach to this, what impact does it have on people with autism or ADHD who all of a sudden feel like they find their place, or that you, there's someone in you who's seeing, you know, the positives in them? I can imagine for some it is an amazing experience that it turns everything on their head, because we often feel what we feel society thinks of us, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, of course. And the impact it has is colossal, because for families, as I say, there's one emotion that governs the entire community, whether you're autistic, not autistic, or even just an interest in this topic, and it's loneliness and isolation. People feel left behind. So what people can do now is almost on its own social media platform in the ND sphere is connect with each other. And we're getting connections and getting members and educators and businesses from all over the world to buy into this. And for the first time in a long time, people aren't feeling alone. Because one thing that upsets me, not just about, you know, locally, but I suppose internationally, is, you know, people pulling the same lever and expecting a different outcome. Because whenever I go out and talk about my experiences being autistic, you know, people say, oh, I can totally relate to that, working through that now. But whenever I'm talking about it, I went through it in the 90s. Mm-hmm. So I suppose instead of being a soapboxy troll, we wanted to make a change. And look, there are people out there that struggle.
Yeah, but too, to some extent, Jude, and I like to have the conversations out in the front rather than sort of, so if I don't want to be offensive or anything, right? But say, for instance, you had a physical disability, and we were speaking now, it could be very clear. So say, for instance, I could see a wheelchair, that we're sitting in a wheelchair. But like, you have to identify that you have autism, ADHD. Do you know what I mean? Is that part of it? In other words, that we as humans, and you'll know much more about this than I in terms of our development as humans, that unless we can literally see it, we don't seem to get it.
Of course, invisible disabilities is a real thing. And what we want to kind of put at the forefront is coming out, so to speak, because for a lot of us, being autistic is something that we're very proud of. Now, we don't dismiss anybody that has challenges and higher levels of support needs. But what we do believe is that every human, regardless of ability, has inherent value and worth. And even whenever people say to me, like if I bump into a parent in a supermarket, they'll say, oh, this is my son called John. And then they'll whisper, they'll say, he's autistic.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm sort of like, you know, one thing, you know, standing right here, you know, it's what I talk about. But it's that kind of hushed tones and attitude that we want to, you know, remove, is that no matter what someone's level of ability is that being autistic is an integral part of someone's identity. And no matter what, they'll still be something that they're good at, and they'll have special gifts and can bring joy to other people. And that's the message we want to share.
And there's a few actors that have a role in this. You can do your bit in terms of speaking publicly. The media can do its bit in terms of platforming that as well, because obviously you have now tools like social media to reach people and what have you. But also, it's very important too that that you know, every outlet that can have a role in promoting this conversation and awareness and these initiatives do so. Listen, congratulations on what you've achieved so far, Jude, and the best of luck tomorrow night. It's already a fabulous achievement. Is the Endosphere app, and it's Endosphere, that is a freely available app. Like, who should or could access it, if you know what I mean? Is it for teachers and businesses, or for everybody?
Well, primarily it's for parents of kids and for adults just starting on the journey, but anyone can join in. It's on App Store and Google Play, so it's there, it's ready to go, it's a one-stop shop, and it can be accessed immediately.
All right, again, good luck with the awards tomorrow, and congratulations on all your achievements so far. Great to see you again, Jude. Take care. Jude Morrow there, CEO and founder of Neurodiversity Training, 086 60 25,000. Hi, Greg. Can I jump in here? Of course you can. Welcome. The Taoiseach Leo Varadkar is now saying that basically Ireland is full, yet when concerned Irish citizens said the same thing, the politicians were quick to denounce them as far right and fascist. I think sometimes it's how conversations are argued. I think we've been having a conversation in Donegal for quite some time that it's about a lot of it's about pressure on services and how you know, can you provide the services, schools, GPs, acute care and what have you, to a population that increases so rapidly. I think lots of people have been having that conversation in the right way, and then obviously there's some people do it in different ways. And maybe the bus tickets cost 85 to stand and it's worth every cent. Where's that? I read an article. I thought it was 135. I was looking at Croke Park, by the way, but anyway, I'll double check that. If Donegal County Council had money, 160, that's what I was thinking. It's 168 to sit, isn't it, Caroline? And I think it's 135 on the pitch or something, or 140? Standing, how much is it standing? 168 standing. And what about if you want to sit down on your bum or whatever other part of your body? We don't know. So you've half the information, Caroline. That's not research. That's not producing. Okay, right. But anyway, maybe it's different in Belfast, because I heard Lee reference Belfast and I just heard the Croke Park piece. But we'll get clarification on that. And listen, maybe it's a great night out, but 160 quid, maybe 200 on a hotel room, diesel up and down. That's why these Highland trips, I'm not saying we're doing one to Bruce. I don't know what the story is there, but that's why they're often such good value, because it eliminates a lot of the extra costs or reduces them. I cannot believe, and I mean this hand on heart, that we're already an hour into the show. So we'll be back after the news and obituary notices with loads more on Wednesday's 9 till noon show. Stay right where you are and keep those text calls and those voice notes to 086 60 25,000 coming into us.